Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we're giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic. And we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music. Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to the 99th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, storytelling, and directing. I'm Oren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Enlow.
Today we've got Maureen Berucha. She's a great director. She's currently working at Jimmy Kimmel, but she's got two features under her belt and a ton of branded content. The thing that's the most exciting, I think, for me with Maureen is that she really managed to take a day job and invent the career that she wanted out of it. And she's going to dive in and tell us all about how she turned what could have been just a regular old job, and she turned it into something that really launched her career.
Yeah, I mean, she literally worked at Sprinkles, a cupcake shop, selling cupcakes to people, and managed to become like to helm their entire marketing campaign through video.
It's awesome. It's awesome. It's really inspiring. It's just about creating your own opportunities, and she does it with a ton of humor. She's really great. So it's a wonderful conversation, and I can't wait for you all to listen to it. But before we get into that, Oren, what have you been working on lately?
Well, as you know, I have been working on editing a new reel, because if you listen to this podcast, you'll know that Matt and I don't really think directors need reels, but all of a sudden, for some reason, I feel like I need a reel.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to do a new type of reel that's a little bit, it's not really based on my friend Ian Pfaff's reel, but kind of inspired by. He did this reel where it's just him singing a song about all his work, and it's like really well done, and it got him all his agents and representatives, and he's like directed at Funny or Die for years, and he's like doing a ton of cool things. And so I wanted to make a reel also that wasn't just a montage of clips and wasn't just a bunch of scenes in a row, but more a little bit of like my personality. And it's almost like if I was talking about a reel on this podcast with you and I added video images to that dialogue, that's kind of what my new reel is going to be. And it's not really a reel. So anyway, I'm trying to figure it out, but I'm basically trying to write stuff and show it to people and not be precious about anything, like just write and send it out. So that's kind of what I've been focusing on this week.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens. You know, I've been thinking a lot about, you know, concept reels, for lack of a better term, you know, like something that has a little bit of a game or a sketch to it. You know, we talk about Paul Grant, he had one for a while, and Tim Wilkheim has my favorite, as we've talked about, where this is the In Memoriam one.
Oh, right, right, right.
It's like the beginning is an Oscar speech, and then they show, you know, In Memoriam, Tim Wilkheim, and then it's all of his clips. It's great. But yeah, I don't know what's better. Is it just nice to have a regular old montage of celebrities, and you just put the most famous people up top, and then some funny jokes and call it a day? Or do you give it a little bit more of a specific spin to it? And
yeah, what I'm trying to figure out too is like, how far back into my back catalog do I go? Like, I think if you and I, if I asked you right now, you'd probably say like, don't put anything like more than 4 years old in there, which is very easy to say. But I look at some of like my feature is, I shot in 2009. It's, you know, almost 9 years old. And I think there's some stuff in there that's like, looks good and feels good. You know?
If it looks good, basically I wouldn't put anything in there that you need to caveat. And that can be from a content perspective or from a camera perspective or from a VFX perspective or whatever else. You know, we were joking about how, like, anything that could be put, like, a discomforting or uncomfortable thought into someone's mind as they're watching the reel, you'd need to cut. So, like, you know, there are a few actors who have passed away since then. So, like, just reminding someone of mortality and death is probably not a thing you want to...
So you really think I shouldn't have any actors in there that are... I've passed away.
I don't think so. Yeah, I mean, maybe it depends on the circumstances, you know? Like, look, if you worked with Paul Newman, you know, keep him in there. But yeah, I don't think so. Or anyone who's had, like, a scandal or anything, I would cut out as well.
Right. Yeah, I sent Matt my first script, and he was like, yeah, just cut out the scandal people, even though I thought it's funny to include them.
No, I didn't say that, actually. I said cut out the VFX.
Oh, right. But isn't... But that VFX section is where the scandal part
I guess
is.
That's true. Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm kind of trying to figure that. It's, you just have to keep reminding yourself that making anything and sending it out to a bunch of people can only lead to good things only and almost things. Never lead to bad things. Yeah. I mean, the worst thing is people won't look at it, which is not that bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Or forget about it. Yeah.
So I'm doing that. I wrote some spec scripts too for, like, commercials that I'm, sent my production company. They actually sent me, like, really good notes this evening that I got to respond to, but I think they're down to, like, shoot stuff. And my friend Avi lives in this really incredible house, and I want to shoot something in his house.
It's a new house. I don't know, man.
But yeah, I'll see. But it's, like, very photogenic.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
Cool. Well, that's exciting, man.
What have you been doing?
I just got back from, I don't think I told you, but we went to the Hoover Dam Shorts Film Festival.
Oh, you didn't tell me, but you know who told me.
Instagram?
Yes.
My game is on point. It was really great, and it's all shorts. We were there for 4 days. You know, it was a thing where I'm starting a gig up tomorrow, actually. We just got back today. And so I was kind of in between things, and it was, they put you up in a hotel. So I thought, well, I can write every morning out in the desert and then spend the 4 days in a movie theater. And then go to parties every night. And it was great. And we met a ton of great people. We saw a ton of great stuff. You know, it was awesome. I think I saw, we saw upwards of 50 films.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, again, all shorts. So.
And I heard the Hoover Dam sucks, right?
No, it's awesome. It's really incredible.
Because I thought the Hoover Dam
Sucks. Hoover, Dam. No, we did do a tour of the Hoover Dam. And it was incredible. Yeah, I think the other thing that I love about film festivals is that you end up in weird parts of the country that you wouldn't normally go to, but I was willing to drive out for 4 free hotel nights.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. So the main reason, besides it being fun and all that stuff, I wanted to go to watch all these shorts, is it's been a while since I've been to a shorts-only festival. I go to Palm Springs pretty often, but it skipped it this year, and... you know, I see a lot of shorts blocks and, you know, I'm on Vimeo all the time and stuff, but to really, like, mainline 50 shorts in a couple days.
Yeah, it sounds tough.
It was grueling. Yeah. I mean, to this festival's credit, they really did a great job of keeping their blocks short. So the runtime for each block was 60 to 90 minutes top. Nothing was over 90 minutes by far. Things were much closer to 60. So, like, you know, you sit through 4, 5, 6 shorts, and then you've got a nice little break. And the town of Henderson is really cute, and so it wasn't super hard. But the thought was, oh, you know, I wouldn't mind doing another short. We've been touring with it. We're towards the end of our run with it. It would be fun to maybe do another one or two. And I thought, well, what a good way to just kind of distill what I think is important and good about shorts in kind of a concise way. And I realized the two things that I really want, the two ingredients that I think a short needs to have is a concise premise, right? Something very clean and very simple. The simpler, the better. Like, don't try and cram your whole feature film story into a 10-minute movie. Like, give me a single problem that needs to get solved, you know, and ideally your two characters, you know, two sides of a coin, basically. You know, there needs to be real conflict in that premise, right? So ideally it's two characters who want opposing things and have to battle it out. And then just those characters need to have specificity. That's it. You know, like, there's a lot of really great filmmakers who are practicing their craft, but if they don't have those two things, all the awesome VFX and super cool lenses and shooting for a ton of days, it doesn't really matter.
Well, what about, I guess, something I've seen in shorts that bothers me sometimes is just like super cliche stuff.
Yeah, sure.
Like the guy, you know, he was supposed to be the getaway driver and somebody saw him and he has to kill someone and mm-hmm. now they have to find this person and get the money. Like,
yeah, look, it's rare that you'll see a filmmaker who is super successful and also still doing shorts, right? Joseph Kahn had one in this festival, which I thought was really interesting. But, you know, like, certainly it's a format where commonly people are honing their craft, right? So, like, you're going to see things that don't feel as fresh as they could be. Or, like, if they haven't seen quite as many shorts or they think this thing is totally original and it's like, oh, well, we see six of these every year. Yeah, definitely, like, a hot take is going to be important to stand out from the crowd. But I would argue that a familiar story with the fundamentals in place is still going to be better than most things.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, good insight.
Yeah, it was fun. Shout out to Hoover, or shout out to the Damn Shorts Fest.
Damn Shorts. Cool. Well, before we talk to Maureen, we're going to check in with our sponsor, Cameron Woodward of Film Casualty, and see if we can learn another lesson about film insurance.
We sat down with our friend Cameron from Film Casualty to talk a little bit more about the ins and outs of insurance and how the fine folks at Film Casualty could help us out.
So, Cameron, I've gone to a lot of rental places and they're demanding that I give them a certificate of insurance.
They're always like, I want a COI, I want a COI. And then we figured out what that is.
And so now I need the certificate. Is that something Film Casualty can help me with?
That's absolutely something that we can help you with. Every Film Casualty customer has access to Film Casualty's certificate request tool. This lets our customers request absolutely as many certificates as they could possibly need. And our team over here turns those things around very quickly and sends them out to any rental company or location that's requesting a certificate.
Right. And from my experience, L&D, which stands for loss and damages, occur on like 80% of shoots. It's like so much more common than you would think.
Yeah. I feel like there's a small car accident on all of my shoots. I'm a bad driver is what I'm saying. For more information about how to protect your film business, gear, project, and crew, go to filmcasualty.com/justshootit. That's filmcasualty.com/justshootit. Insurance for every kind of filmmaker.
We are here with Maureen Barucha. Thanks for joining us on this rainy evening in Los Angeles.
Yeah, very unique night.
Yes.
But one we won't ever forget.
Yeah. And so you are a director on Kimmel.
Yeah, currently a segment director on Kimmel.
But let's rewind a little. So you went to film school.
Yeah, I went to film school like 10 years ago. I went to Boston University. I'm originally from Santa Barbara, but went to school out there. And
did you ever think about going to Santa Barbara?
I did. Actually, I went to the community college there. Funny enough, I still think that the community college classes that I took were better than any of the classes I took at any of the colleges.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. That makes sense, though.
Because I think a lot of people wanted to teach there, and you're like, mm-hmm. it's by the beach. And it's like,
oh, yeah. And it's so close to LA. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of Hollywood people that live in Santa Barbara.
Yeah. So I did take classes in Santa Barbara, but I went and got my master's degree in Boston University. I came out here to LA to finish up my my master's program, and I had an internship on CSI, which was really cool. And I worked.
What's an internship on CSI?
Like, the one that I had was like the best internship ever. It was basically I just got to be on set and watch things and then sit in the writer's room and listen. And then occasionally I would have to write copy. That was it.
Did you do any work?
Not really. I mean, I kind of wrote, like, we would write stuff about, like, episodes. You're like, oh, can you just, like, summarize this one app? Like, read the script and summarize it for, like, maybe the DVD covers, or the DVDs.
Right, for the TV guide.
Yeah. So you were just like, it wasn't that much work, but the person that I was under, Corinne Marinin, she was the best. Like, she was just like, yeah, you can go hang out on set.
She was a producer?
She was a producer. And she subsequently wrote on the show, and she's a writer now. But then, yeah, I got to sit in the writer's room a couple of times and just kind of see how it worked.
Wow. What an education.
It
huh?
was it was like, I mean, I fought for like, I was like, I don't want just an internship where you sit in an office.
Yeah.
So I had that internship. And
then you were a director.
I'm a director. Yeah.
I mean, you were a director. Like at that time you were like, knew you were going
to
be a director.
Yes. Yeah. I went to, I was like focused on directing.
So like when you're on set on CSI, you like, they have like a format of how they shoot that show, right?
Yeah. It was actually interesting because I was in an internship for 6 months. And, you know, it was really interesting to see how the guest directors would come in and how, like, we really didn't know much about the show, but it was like the DPs and the producers and all the other people that were like really doing stuff where like the director would come in and they would kind of show them the ropes. Mm-hmm. And then they would sometimes they would talk shit about like some of the guest directors or like, oh, they weren't very good. Or like a cinematographer got fired one time or some of the actors.
Can you
being
tell
crazy.
Me, does a bad director on CSI ruin an episode or are they unruinable?
No, I think because it's a well-oiled machine. Like at that time, I think they were like the number one show.
Yeah.
I mean, again, you have so many things protecting the creative entities and the writers are on set, especially on a show, on a TV show, and especially on a show of that level, that I think that they couldn't have really ruined anything. I think that you just see like, oh, they're difficult or like they're not getting it or, you know, and you can see like sometimes the line producer would like step in or the writer would have more to say or contribute. And again, I got to just observe all of that.
Right. So and also hear behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So you can kind of translate, oh, I see like it's uncommon for this person to step in and have a heavier hand in this.
Yeah.
Sort of
and it, I mean, my first internship exposure, I was a little spoiled because you're just like, it was on the back lot at Universal.
Yeah.
So you're like, this is my dream. I'm driving in every morning. And like lunch was like, well, there's fish options and steak and chicken and shrimp.
Yeah,
and
it's
and
a
then
successful
like,
show.
Yeah. You're like, this is how it is on every show. It's like, no, you don't get like catered lunch like this every. Yeah.
But Kimmel has really good food, right?
They have good food. I mean, this,
I don't know if you're allowed to talk about it. But I
nothing
only,
was like CSI.
Really? I only know that they have really good food because they talked about it on the show. Like someone, one of his guests.
There's always good snacks. Yeah, they have a good green room.
Viola Davis was on the show and she's like, my daughter only wants to come with me to Kimmel because she loves the food.
No, it's a good time there in the green room. That's like the best green room I've ever been to.
when I was there, they had like four types of coconut water.
Whoa.
It's pretty awesome.
Options are always a good idea.
Yeah. Boy, you really feel spoiled when you have four types of coconut water.
You're like,
water.
Which flavor?
Yeah, it might have been two, but I think for
in
the
your
story's
mind,
sake,
yeah,
four.
Sure. It was many. It was a plethora of
options.
Yeah,
I didn't even know.
Yeah,
what,
after plain and like mango, I don't know where else to go, honestly.
Yeah, well,
I've
were, like,
sweetened,
different
unsweetened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Oh, you could have like shavings, just like not, you know.
Yeah, the little floating one. Anyway. Yeah.
Wait, so let's go back to CSI for a second.
Yeah.
I know it might not be super fresh for you, but
no,
I mean,
I have vivid, I'm still friends with a lot of people on that show.
Oh, cool. Yeah. You're still investigating crimes.
still going on.
I was asking about whether there were directors, like if any directors like could ruin an episode. And you said no. And I think like, if that's the case, is there, what's satisfying about directing a CSI episode?
I mean, maybe they could, but I feel like there's so many like checkpoints to something getting ruined. Or again, I think like the DP that they had, they like fired halfway through an episode, but then there's so many other people that know that show inside and out.
Right. Yeah. The operator just stepped up or they called one of the people that is on the show.
And again, and this
time,
is also from like an intern's like viewing of like, they can't ruin an episode, but it was mostly because you're like, wow, there's lots of people to almost babysit them. But that's also what I've kind of, you know, not that TV directing is like that really, but I think especially on a show that was on for seven seasons, the look and all that stuff is so set that you're just there to make sure that all the, you know, that everything's kind of, all the checks are checked.
Yeah. It's follow through more than it is origination. Yeah. Yeah. Not to be specific about CSI, but I think in general, on a show that, specific.
Yeah. I think you might, you know what, you probably could mess it up from a directing the actor's standpoint, you know, not getting an actor where they need to be.
Not the main actors, the guest actors.
So like on CSI, you know, every episode is about like a murderer or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So those guest stars more.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the people that are on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they even listen
like,
to directors?
Don't even bother talking.
I feel like they had some really cool directors on, like Quentin Tarantino directed an episode, and like when I was on, Martha Coolidge directed an episode, and I was like, oh my gosh, like she directed Valley Girl and Real Genius. So I feel like a lot of those people come in and they just have like, people are in awe of them anyway, so you're going to listen.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
But even still, they're like, three takes and we're good. I got it.
But yeah. So is there, do people make shot lists? Because I think, I don't remember, but I know there's like, you do like a long lens master, right? And then you do like a medium and a tight shot like at the same time. And then the other person. And don't you have like one Steadicam person and one guy like sniping or girl sniping like with a long lens? Like, isn't there something like that?
I feel like I wish that when I did have that internship, I maybe would have asked more questions of the DP and like kind of the shot stuff. Because I think at that point, I didn't realize coming from like film and like you know, you start to finish and like you're with somebody and the director is like, I think that was my first kind of taste of like, oh, this is a different type of collaboration. And I feel like that's the first time when I was like, oh, the writers are the cool ones on a TV show.
Yeah.
Like they get to sit around in a room and like talk together and like bounce ideas off. And you're like, this is awesome.
Yeah. And they can create anything. They say, we want this person to do this thing and they do it, right?
Yeah.
And the next week or like, we want this location or this car crash and it happens. And they're like, God.
And on that show too, a lot of the editors would be direct or like some of the producers would direct. So they know the show really well.
Right.
So
like all those shows, like Law and Order, they're all kind of like pretty nice looking shows, you know? I mean, I know they have gigantic budgets and gigantic sets and gigantic lighting grids and all that stuff. Yeah. But I've always like just kind of been impressed by how you can shoot something so pretty, so fast with so much story and so much plotting. And I knew a DP on CSI. I wonder if he's the one that got fired.
No. The one that got fired was like a new one. Like one of the, I remember one of the DPs that I remember really was like, oh, he's like the best one. Or he's just like kind of running the show. Michael Slovich. Later, I'm like, he's does DP like, now, right? You know, now it's like.
Doesn't he do Mad Men and stuff?
He did like Breaking Bad and like, Mad Men. But I remember on CSI, I didn't really know who he was.
Being
but,
like, oh, that guy's the shit.
Yeah. And then now when I see his name, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember like watching him like when I was an intern on CSI.
Right. That's the guy I know, you might know him, Nelson Craig. He went to SC.
I know the name.
He was this DP that. I talk about him a lot because I was like a dolly grip and he was a DP on a thesis film for this guy. And they spent over $100,000 on this thesis film. There was like explosions and there was a techno crane and there was a stunt team and doubles. And like they built this set that we destroyed the entire set. And I think Bobby Lamb was the camera assistant on it or something. And so I was like, why? What kind of idiot would spend like $100,000 on a thesis film? Like, it's not going to be good.
Make a movie with that at that point.
Yeah, or just make like $5,000-$10,000 shorts to learn what all the mistakes and then make like a $50,000 short or something.
For the record, that is exactly my advice.
Just take all that money and make five movies. Yeah.
No, but so, and then I worked with Nelson a couple of times after that because I was probably the cheapest dolly grip he knew. And we shot like a short horror film on like the DVX-100 and we got, he convinced him to get like a Fisher dolly and we shot like, it was like 2-3-5 like mad. It was like, he would just, it doesn't matter if someone gave him $1, he would like try to get the 18K light and he would try to get.
It makes the all biggest, the difference. Yeah. It's just like.
Yeah. He was always treating everything like it was a huge movie. Like not like a student DP. Yeah. And a year later he was shooting CSI and I was like, what the heck happened? Like
that's awesome.
The guy that I said was like an idiot for like wasting all this money just leapfrogged into the big
league. I feel
like
the look of like the person that shoots that movie is going to benefit more than the person that like maybe directed that.
Yeah, of course.
If you are a DP, you find the sucker who's willing to spend like,
we need all that. We need this stuff.
Sure. Yeah.
That's how the composer on my movie was. He had never done an orchestral score on a movie before, my movie. And he did my movie and he got like nominated for like a Ghent award and he like, we did not have the money to have like a live orchestra, but he basically
found a way,
you know, it was like, oh, it's $10,000 for all the music. And then it ended up being like $50,000 for the music or something. And all live, like amazing musicians that play at the LA Philharmonic. And the score is like the best part of the movie.
I think like sometimes, when you're making something and you get somebody excited, like people all of a sudden want to like, I'll do that favor or that sounds really cool.
Right. But I think I guess what I'm saying is it's a little different because definitely in that movie, the score is probably the best part of it. I mean, there's some good performances too, I think. But his next thing was an ABC TV show. You know, and then he did Shameless. He does big Hollywood movies now in like just a few years because he treated the project, which was like this low budget indie film, indie drama, like it was a big Hollywood movie. So I think there's something interesting about that attitude. And that's why back to like CSI and how they shoot it.
Yeah.
I'm like, how does something look so good and get shot so fast? you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's funny. If I had to go back, I would definitely like ask more questions and like look sure. at things that I wasn't paying attention to back then.
Yeah.
It is so overwhelming when you're just like, okay, great. I've never been on a movie set, but you're like, okay, I can just hang out all day and just observe everybody.
Yeah. You were soaking up everything you could. It's just like, now we all know more. So you can kind of decode things.
But it was cool. So when I was on CSI as an intern at the same time, I had an internship in post on an Alexander Payne produced movie.
Oh wait, which one?
King of California.
Oh, I don't know.
It was with Michael Douglas and Rachel Wood. I started out as an intern, and then they ended up bumping me up to a PA because I did PA work, and like I got my first credit.
Hey,
cool.
So it was kind of fun to be like, I saw this big budget TV show and then this little small indie movie, and just like the difference. And I remember the coolest thing is the first day when I was on the internship, I watched a cut of the movie, and then it was like me, the editor, the assistant editor, and like one other person. And they were like, okay, great, Maureen, what are your notes? I was like, oh, I just came in. And like, but I instantly, like, I hadn't written anything down because I had a piece of paper, but I was like, okay, this is what I think. And they're like, great notes. Like, but I was like, I'm just a nobody. I came in. And
yeah.
So it was like, that was a really cool experience. But so kind of after the internships, again, I came in 10 years ago. So right after I was on those jobs, I was like, great, these are great internships. It'll be a great stepping stone for a job. And the writer strike happened.
Whack, whack. Yeah.
So I was like, and everyone's like, there are no jobs.
It's hard to explain how few jobs there were.
Yeah. Like everything was shut down.
Don't you feel like everyone at our level at that time, who was just basically had a camera and friends, was like making stuff?
Yes, they were making stuff. But if you have to make a living.
Yeah. I mean, right? I just got out of Boston University, not a cheap school.
Right.
And they give you like a month window of like, you don't have to pay your loan back for a month. You're great.
Cool. well, I'll be famous by then. Yeah. So you're like,
no problem.
3-picture deal.
But actually in that time, what was interesting is I think a lot of studios were doing this. I did go in and met a bunch of people that saw my thesis film, which I shot in Pakistan.
Oh, cool.
That it was like a narrative short that I shot there, got into a couple of festivals like the Santa Barbara.
Are you Pakistani?
So, well, it's complicated. my mom's Irish, half Irish, Catholic. And then my dad was born in Burma. He's Indian descent, but his family naturalized to Pakistan because they're Muslim. So he lived
like during the separation, whatever it's called.
Well, he lived in Burma till he was 16, and then his family they moved to Bangladesh, and then war broke out there, and then he moved to Pakistan and lived there for 3 years, and then came to America. Okay. So my dad's been in America since like the 70s, since he was like 23.
Yeah, yeah.
But we have a lot of family that lives there. And actually, the story that I wrote was a story about him growing up in Burma, and he takes his rooster to a cockfight and it dies.
But you shot it in Pakistan.
Yeah, because I had a cousin who was 9, of my dad in the
story. Totally, I'm curious. Yeah. What did this movie feel like? Was it fun? You said it with a little bit of a smile. I was like, wait, is this a comedy?
It's not a comedy.
Because it would be incredible, because you do a lot of comedy.
Yeah, it's funny. I kind of straddle a line of both, which, you know, to the detriment of everybody that's ever represented me. They're like, you got to pick one. But it's more like, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Salaam Bombay.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. It was a little bit, I feel like that was one of the main inspirations. Because it's basically, we took cameras, me and my brother, he ran sound, I did camera. We had a script, cousins translated because I don't speak the language. We went and shot for 2 weeks. Rock I'd never roll. Been out of the country.
Yeah, that is cool.
Wait, was the... It was in Farsi, the movie?
Urdu.
Urdu, sorry.
Yeah, so I don't speak the language, but I originally wrote a short story in college, an undergrad, and then I turned the short story into a 15-minute movie. Mm-hmm. And so my cousin, who's 9, he was 8, he was the same age my dad was in the script, non-actor. We went and it was like, we did pre-production for a week.
So excellent.
And then shot for a week.
Is it online?
Yeah. It's called Abaji.
Okay, we will definitely have that in the show notes. That's very exciting.
Yeah, it was interesting because when I was at BU, my advisors were like, no, you shouldn't go. Because at BU, you had to shoot everything on film,
got it.
So I got special permission to shoot on a DVX because I was like, I don't want to take film to a foreign country and have it X-rayed and be like, oh, my work is gone. But then the other thing that they were like really advising me against was like, well, you've never been out of the country. You don't speak the language. You're going to have culture shock. You're going to get sick.
Mm-hmm. So you'd never been there before.
I'd never been out of the country. I've never been anywhere. So I was like, but I just feel like I should try. Like if I fail and I don't try, then at least I can say I tried. So I changed advisors and I was like, I don't want you to be my advisor anymore.
Yeah.
And then my new advisor was like, yeah, go, let's try it.
I mean, to be fair, all of that stuff is like semi-found it. I get why someone would be concerned for you, but also that sounds like such a fucking awesome movie. No,
but that's like a film. Like, that's
is it. That is good. Like, so rock and roll, right?
Like, we were just like, I'm going to do it. Let's just go.
That is it, man.
But wouldn't you say the good film school film is the one where someone goes to like the country without of one of their parents, and the bad one is the guy that does like the sci-fi like person that tried to like save his girlfriend who died in a car accident?
I think I leaned into like, let's embrace this aesthetic.
Too specific. I'm sure you're talking shit about
you're like the one that like, you know.
No, I've literally worked on like 10 movies.
You're definitely burning a specific person.
But I leaned into the aesthetic of it because I feel like I saw so many student films that had a big budget that like didn't seem like they were trying. There were small budgets that tried to seem big in a bad way. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, this is low budget indie. We're shooting it like cinema verite. I don't speak the language. So changing it into another language is a great way to hide sometimes bad actors.
Oh, for sure.
So I feel like the compliment that everybody would say is like, oh, this doesn't feel like a student film. And I'm like, great.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I feel like so often that's the trap of like any thesis film is like, it's good. It feels like a student film.
Yeah. And did it get you any attention? Like what ended up happening?
So it got me, so that was kind of funny is that at the writer's strike, I actually went in for a few meetings because people were like, we can't really do anything now, but we're just meeting with people. Mm-hmm. So I met at like the CW.
Okay, cool.
Lori Opendon, who runs like casting, they were like, we can't really do anything right now. So they had like a committee of people just to bring in people to like look at their work and be like, okay, we wanted to meet you.
Yeah. Cool. I think the writer's strike was like an awesome opportunity for like new filmmakers. That's when I had my most meetings too, because I made like a short about the strike, and then like everyone in town saw it because they weren't doing anything.
That's true. It wasn't all bad, but like the writer's strike and then the recession were kind of a 1-2 punch of like, if you were just kind of finding your footing, you know.
And I got into a couple of festivals. I got into like the Santa Barbara Film Festival in the Hamptons and the Jordan Film Festival.
Oh, cool.
But the festivals
Michael
didn't
Jordan
really
has his own festival.
The country.
He's his own country.
Yes. But it didn't really, I mean, I feel like festivals were hard because it didn't really do much other than just like, it was cool that I was in a festival and got to be a part of that. But so having done that and like going around with the writer's strike, I had to get a job. I was like, okay, I gotta start paying the bills. So I actually got a job working behind the counter at Sprinkles Cupcakes.
Mm-hmm. Which is a very popular, at least I feel like it was very popular. Is it still
and
really
then
popular?
It was like peak.
Then
right,
it was like they had two stores. It was like, lying down the street. Now
it's
they
like
have like
Pinkberry
18 stores all over the country, though.
I mean, yeah. They're maybe kind of shrinking a little bit now, too, I feel like. But they're the ones with the ATM cup.
Yeah, they have the ATM. They have like ice cream now. Like,
yeah.
They've kind of like, you know, now they're at Disney World, like downtown Disney World and downtown Disney.
The ATM is like a machine where you can buy cupcakes.
Yeah, 24/7.
Yeah.
But
it's like a vending machine for cupcakes.
Oh, cool.
For very classy, expensive cupcakes.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Do they have gluten-free options?
They do. They have a gluten-free red velvet. It's awesome.
Okay, so you work behind the counter at
Sprinkles. Yeah, so I got a job working behind the counter at Sprinkles. And so kind of when this happened, I was like working there. And then kind of I started to get PA jobs again. I like worked on the Caveman pilot.
Oh, cool.
And I would like flip-flop. If when I had a PA job, I would work at Sprinkles on the weekends and I would PA during the week. So I'd work like 7 days a week for like 3-month stretch. And then I would, when a PA job would end, I would like work full time at Sprinkles. Mm-hmm. So kind of when I was working and doing this, the owners of Sprinkles actually saw my thesis film. And they're like, oh, this is really cool.
Wait, how did you meet the owners? Did they work in your shop?
Well, at that time, Sprinkles was, I mean, it's always been just kind of like a small run business. And Charles.
Is it in Beverly Hills?
Mm-hmm. Charles and Candace Nelson. They started it. They owned it. They ran it. Very, you know, you would see them all the time. But one of the guys that worked there, he was best friends with Charles, Stephen, and he saw it and he's like, oh, I want to show Charles this. And so he kind of passed it. So they just saw my thesis film. And when I was working there, they were like, you know what? We loved your movie. We need someone to make a corporate film for us. Could you maybe do that? So they come in and talk about what you want to do. And I was like, okay. So I was like, okay, great. This is my opportunity to like pitch ideas. Mm-hmm. So I kind of came up with like a proposal for the corporate film. And when I went in, I was like, look, corporate films suck. Nobody wants to watch them. But your company, you guys have such a great story. We should do a little mini doc. Mm-hmm. And people will watch that. And it was like they were investment bankers. Then like the .com went bust. And like they started their own business. They followed their dreams. So we should do a little mini doc. I was like, you should also be doing branded content. Mm-hmm. I was like, we could do short films based on your cupcake flavors. You have a black and white cupcake. We can make a film noir. We could do a Western. We could do, you know, it rains sprinkles. It sprinkles cupcakes.
Sure.
And they were like, oh, that's so cool. And then I also pitched, like, you should also be doing, like, B-roll packages. Because I had seen in the store, like, outlets from, you know, Tokyo or London would come and they would shoot B-roll. And I was like, no, you should have a package you give them so you can control the brand and the image. Uh-huh. So I think they were like, wow, these are great.
Those are all awesome ideas.
Yeah, and they were just...
Hold on, let me write those down. Yeah.
So they were just looking for the corporate film. Kind of the meeting ended with, well, we don't have money for all of those things, but let's start with the corporate film.
What is a corporate film?
So we ended up making a doc, and it was kind of something that we would show new people when they came into the company. So if you got hired, okay, you'd sit down and watch just like 15-minute documentary about them, and it was like their story.
Did you tape their eyes open, their eyelids open?
No, but that's the point, right? Like normally it's like, hi, I founded Sprinkles, yeah, but like you did something interesting and cool and got people excited about
it. I basically sat them down, basically interviewed them, and was like, tell me about what happened. And like, you know, it was like, we were opening the first day and like the doors opened. And then I talked about like how they recycle and how they give back to the community. And it was basically just taking their story and putting pretty images to it and like making it interesting and engaging to watch.
And you shot all the images or did you go to iStock.com? Who's the company that sponsors everyone? Dissolve? No, there's like some.
Oh, there is.
There's a stock footage company that sponsors like
a bunch
of podcasts.
I should probably use my old cupcake footage and like put it up on there.
There you go. Yeah.
I was like, I have so much. No, I shot, they bought me a camera. And they were like, okay, we'll send you to all the stores and you you can hire your crew to like interview. So I hired all my BU like buddies to awesome. Like shoot stuff. And I would go to all the store openings and shoot like little vignettes. So mm-hmm. I went to all the stores, including the Kuwait one that we had.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you basically kind of stopped working the counter and basically became their media person.
Yeah. So what happened was after I kind of pitched that idea, I was doing their corporate film. And so I was still kind of doing both. I was actually working at Gracie in The Simpsons, James L. Brooks's company.
Yeah.
As a PA. And I was like, you know what? PA work is not paying enough. I knew so many people that would get into a job at a company and like they would be an assistant forever. And like they'd mm-hmm. be like, I'm close enough. So they just kind of settle. Mm-hmm. And I know myself. So I was like, I'm going to quit this job and I'm going to work the other way around. So I was like, I'm going to take my job at Sprinkles and I'm going to quit being a PA and I'm just going to make my own stuff.
Sure.
So my last day that
God,
I worked.
That's wild. So you quit Gracie Films
to work at Sprinkles.
To work at Sprinkles.
Hardcore. That's awesome.
They were like, we want you to be the assistant manager at the store. Will you do that? And I was like, all right. So I was like, okay, now I have
benefits. But then you have like to worry about scheduling and people so being on time and stealing money.
Yeah, I knew I had like, okay, I gotta, because they were basically put me on salary, I got benefits, and then I was get to do my movie stuff for them on the side.
Did they pay you extra for the movie
stuff? Yeah. So I was like, okay, great. This is like almost like having two jobs for the, you know, for one company. But on my last day at Gracie, I met Yardley Smith.
Oh, cool.
And she's the voice of Lisa Simpson. And I knew that she used to come into Sprinkles, or she came into Sprinkles. So when I met her, the producer was like, guess where Maureen's leaving to go work? And they were like, she's like, where? And it's like, Sprinkles. She's like, oh my God, I love Sprinkles. Like, she was just like so excited. And she's like, now I'm like, now when you come in, like, I'll see you.
Sure, yeah.
So the next time she came in, and I stopped working at Gracie, the next time she came in, she was like, what are you working on? And I was like, oh, we're doing the short film series for Sprinkles. We hadn't done any yet. And she's like, I'd love to be in one. And she like wrote her name and number down and she was like, let me know. And I knew that her favorite cupcake was the strawberry. So I was like, oh, you could be in the strawberry short. And she was like, I'd love that.
Lisa Simpson is in the strawberry short.
So she was the first one. Yeah. So I went back to the owners and I was like, well, now we have our first celebrity. I was like, Yardley Smith wants to be in one. And so they were like, okay, let's make our first short. So
you attached Yardley Smith and then you got your strawberry short.
That started
greenlit.
All the shorts.
I got to say, this is the best day job story we've had on this show by leaps and bounds.
It's kind of insane. Like, it's just like, okay, what? How can I?
I love it. No.
So that basically I made that one with Yardley and I made another. I made the black and white film noir while I was managing. They made me a manager also. Mm-hmm. So I was assistant manager for a year and then a manager doing the movies. And then after that year, I think I told them, I was like, look, I'm still going to want to do film. If I have to have a job, I want it to be here, but I'm always going to be trying to get out and do film. Mm-hmm. So they actually created a position in the company that I did all the branded content. So I did 10 short films. I did all the training videos. The owner used to be on Cupcake Wars, so I go shoot little behind the scenes vignettes of her on set. And then I would go and shoot like all the new store openings. So they basically created a position in the company for me. And I did that.
Were you, when you say shoot, were you also like DPing stuff?
Yeah. So anytime we had like a short film, I would hire a crew and we had a budget, like a little tiny budget. And I would kind of use it as a little bit of a studio because I would pitch them, movies. Mm-hmm. And then I would, have to put together a budget and like, I'd have to finagle like, okay, I can, mm-hmm. you know, and I would write shorts like based on what I could get for free.
Sure.
We shot one in Santa Barbara, like it's about a guy on a desert island, but I'm like, all we need is a boat. So like I found like a guy with a fishing boat that let us use it for free. And like he jumped, like we see the boat and the guy jumps in the boat. So we shot on this boat and it was like, how are we going to afford this? I was like, don't worry, I got the boat.
Yeah, yeah.
And it sprinkles.
I just need a lot of coupons.
Yeah, he's going to, I mean, I did pay a lot of people in cupcakes.
Also, but people in Santa Barbara probably didn't know that Sprinkles was this like blowing up company.
But yeah, so like I basically did that for a while and it was cool because, I got to work at home a lot and like I basically
Edit everything and write everything?
So anything that was like scripted, I kind of had a little bit of a budget so I would get a crew. So I'd get a I don't really like to shoot things that I direct. Mm-hmm. It's using two different parts of my brain. Mm-hmm. But anything that was like a vignette or like, you know, shooting stuff that was like a store opening, I would shoot that. You know, it's like more doc style and then mm-hmm. I would just find the story or put that stuff together. So it just kind of depended. And so the shorts, we needed 10. We had budgets for those and everything else was just kind of in-house.
Cool.
Yeah. And then I got to like hire friends that were like a composer and do music and like.
That's so good. This is like, it's a different version of the thing that we talk about on this show all the time of just kind of creating your own opportunities, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you're hinting at the thing people call golden handcuffs, right? Where you have a good job that you like, but people seem like you probably really connected with them. Yeah. They were really supportive. And so it's easy to end up not pursuing the things you actually want to do. But I love how you made that job work for you and towards your goals.
Yeah. And kind of when I stopped working kind of in the industry, everybody was like, that seems like a mistake. Like, it seems like you're going to like lose all your connections. You're not going to be like meeting people. Like, it's not going to be where you want to go. And in my gut, I was like, nah, I feel like this is like right for me. I'm going to figure it out. And whether it was like, okay, they're not giving me movies anymore. And there was a time where we made 10 and then they were like, we don't really know what to do with them. And they stopped making the shorts.
Mm-hmm. Did you put them on YouTube or?
Yeah, what? They're all on YouTube. They actually played in all of the stores because Sprinkles has like 18 stores in all the stores besides LA, they have TV screens. I don't think they have them anymore, but they had them at one point. So all the shorts would play on a loop in the stores.
That's cool.
Yeah. So it was like cool that they were just like, let's figure out this weird art installation at our cupcake bakeries.
Right, right.
But at that time when it kind of dried up, I was like, now I'm getting creatively stifled. Mm-hmm. So I need to like go. And I got mad at myself because I did the kind of golden handcuffs. Like, okay, I'm feeling creatively fulfilled, but then it gets taken away and you're like, now I'm frustrated.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I started taking classes at UCB. I started shooting stuff with like my brother and like I did stuff for College Humor. And
so your brother is an actor?
Yeah, my brother Ahmed Barucha is a stand-up and an actor. So he has a group called Dead Kevin, like a sketch group. And they did like one sketch a week for like 3 years. So they have kind of like their DP, but when he couldn't do it, I would DP and I would help out. So I maybe shot like maybe 1/3 of like all of their sketches. Mm-hmm. So I would do that and just kind of started to be like, I need to figure out stuff outside of the Sprinkles job. And so I ended up kind of reconnecting randomly, or I was like, you know what? I need to make my own short. I haven't done my own short in a long time. I've done stuff for Sprinkles. So I had this idea. And I got Ron Funches and Matt Bronger to kind of sign onto it. It's called Movie My Machine. And it's about two guys who build this machine in their garage that erases their memory so they can rewatch their favorite movies over and over again and they get addicted to their machine. So I was like, okay, I like started to build a set or whatever. And I was like, this is the ball's rolling. At the same time, I actually reconnected with a friend that I went to grad school with. And she was working at Mar Vista Entertainment, which mm-hmm. is a production company.
Sure, mm-hmm. yeah.
And she was like, I hadn't seen her in like a couple years.
And they make a lot of movies.
She was like, we make like 40 movies a year. So she's like, would you want to direct one? She's like, I've seen your Sprinkles stuff. I think it's great. And I was like, sure. She's like, okay, well, you know, we would do some lower budget stuff, but maybe I'll send you a script. So a couple weeks later, she sent me a script.
And low budget is like $500,000,
yeah,
right?
Half a mil. And so I was like, well, it was not exactly what I wanted, but I was like, it'd be fun. So, but then she told me the shooting dates and it was the same dates that I was going to shoot the short with Ron Funches and Matt Bronger. Mm. So I thought about it and I passed. I was like, you know what? I'm working on this passion project, this short film.
Funches is so funny.
Yeah. No, he was like.
Bronger's funny too, but like, but Funches is like pure charisma, I guess is what I'm saying.
No, so I was like,
what's his name?
Ron Funches.
I'm going to look him up.
But I was like, I'm going to have to pass it through. Like, I think some people thought I was crazy. Like, you have an opportunity to do a feature.
To do a feature.
And yeah. I was like, yeah, but I have this other project that I'm... So luckily enough, the girl, Hannah, she was like, you know what? I really want to work with you. So if there's something that you've written that you want to direct, why don't you send that to me? So it was really funny. I was like, oh, great. I have this perfect idea. I did not. But I had just read the script they gave me, so I understood the model mm-hmm. and their format. I came up with an idea, brought my friend Ellen on board, and we wrote a script in a month. And so then we sent it back to them. We're like, oh, yeah, this is that script we're talking about. And they're like, we want to make it.
From Mar Vista.
Mm-hmm. So they bought it, and then I got to direct it. And then, again, I'm still working at Sprinkles at this time, so Sprinkles gave me, like, 3 months off.
Yeah, that's great.
Wait, so what was the script?
Yeah.
Was it a TV movie?
So it was geared for a Lifetime, and it kind of touched on my cupcake experience, but it was about a hot handyman who kind of becomes this interloper with this couple who's, like, renovating this empty house. And he kind of gets in the middle of them, and like mm-hmm. it ends with a showdown in this empty renovated house. And so he kind of just becomes like the interloper and like a psycho guy.
Right. So it's like a little steamy, mm-hmm. a little thriller.
Yeah.
Like an empty house. So like it's a cheap location.
Yes. Which we actually ended up shooting in New England. And we had this old farmhouse, which was, again, great for production design because we had a super low budget. And anytime something didn't look right, we're like, throw a tarp on it. It's like they're redoing this house. It was like, put some boxes over there. Like, put some, you know, crap in that corner.
Right.
So if it looked shitty, it was like, yeah, they're renovating this house.
Yeah. The first movie I worked on, Mitch's movie, The Hamiltons, it was like about a family that just moved, that moves around a lot. So like every house they're at is like, there's just boxes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Empty boxes.
But yeah, so that's kind of just, that was kind of like how the trajectory happened. It was just like, okay. And then it just happened to be in that next year I made another short with like Lauren Lapkus, Mary Holland, Aparna Nancherla, and then I made my second movie with Mar Vista, which was a little bit like, it wasn't technically for Lifetime. It was another thriller, an erotic thriller. And that went into a couple of festivals. And
then did it end up on Lifetime? Or?
It did. Lifetime ended up buying it afterwards.
Yeah, they have like a very good relationship. So like, you know.
And that one starred like Madeline Zima, which she's like awesome. Yeah. And she's like,
she was on the Californication, right?
Yeah. We're like such kindred spirits. We're like, oh, I'm so glad I met you. And then after that, I got the job at Kimmel, and I actually left Sprinkles Cupcakes for Kimmel. So I was doing all that stuff.
So, while
I was
working. Wait,
hold on. You had two features
and
these two shorts, and you still worked at Sprinkles.
Yeah.
But as their media person. So
it was a full-time job. It was like 40 hours a week. But at that point,
you had to be at the store.
No. Once they created the job for me, I worked over at corporate.
Oh, okay.
And the last three, because I worked for Sprinkles for 10 years. The last 3 years I worked from home, but I basically could do my hours. If I punch my hours in at night, I could edit at night or mm-hmm. I could, you know, so I figured out a way to like get it all done.
Yeah.
Right.
It was crazy.
Wait, so what happened off the first short? So you made this short. It's mm-hmm. got these two really hilarious guys in it. And then do you play festivals? Does that get you an agent? Do you have reps? What's the deal?
You know, actually, the way I got my reps is when I sold my first script. Again, it was a little bit of like...
The one to Mar Vista.
The Mar Vista one.
And they didn't even ask you to write a script. You just wrote a script and sent it to them.
My friend had said like, if there's something that you've written, let me know. And I was like, oh yeah, totally. And then I just got a friend and we wrote it in a month. And I was like, here's that script I was talking about. So she just was like, send it to me if you have something. And I was like, okay.
And you were writing it while you were doing your job at Sprinkles?
It was a little bit, but that's why I brought on a partner. Because I was like, there's no way I could write this by myself this fast. So she was my roommate at the time. So I was like, let's punch this out.
So you just like outlined it and then mm-hmm. wrote it? And
we kind of broke story and then we kind of took it half and half and like split it up.
And did you like it? Like, were you?
Yeah. I mean, we thought it was like way smarter than they gave us notes that like made it a little mm-hmm. bit more dumb. And we're like, oh, they took out the thing that was like made it really smart.
Right.
But we're like, okay, whatever. You have to kill your babies.
But you also, you kind of had that gift of knowing it's for a specific place and had a specific voice and a formula. So you're not trying to totally reinvent the wheel. It's like, oh, you know, it needs to be kind of a few of these things. You know, there's only so many things that Mar Vista does, right?
Well, I think too, like, I mean, maybe that's, I think, why I thrived at Sprinkles and those kinds of things, where sometimes when you, and maybe for me, when you have those parameters, mm-hmm. you just find ways to be more creative.
Yeah.
Then if you have like, you can write anything and do anything, it's like, oh, it takes forever because you're just like, what? I don't want it to suck.
Yeah.
But then when you have those parameters or like those restrictions,
you got to make a movie about a cupcake, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. It's got to be magical and fun.
Black and white.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. It has to be on brand with the store as well. Yeah.
You don't have to answer this question, but do you make a good amount of money from selling a script to Mar Vista?
Again, I think how they can make so many movies and take a chance on people is, you know, I wasn't in the DGA at the time. I wasn't in the Writers Guild. So there weren't any kind of minimums. It wasn't a ton of money, but it was definitely like, oh, this is a nice chunk of money that I didn't have.
And you split it with your co-writer?
Yeah.
But it wasn't enough to be like, oh, I should just write scripts for Mar Vista and quit Sprinkles.
No. I mean, I also don't know if that would be creatively fulfilling.
Yeah, that becomes another version of the day job, right?
Yeah, and yeah. I feel like I am always, again, maybe that's also my problem. I'm always like, what's next? What's different? So I wouldn't want to get into the routine of that.
Right. So, okay, so you did the short, kind of, it did well, but it didn't get you.
Oh, so then kind of else? I got the lawyers through selling the script, and a friend was like, oh, we heard, I was like, I knew that I needed to get someone to do my contract when I sold the movie, or when they said they were going to buy it. This was on a Thursday. In the morning, I like told my sister-in-law, I was like, I need a lawyer. I need to, you know, and then she was like, okay, I have somebody. And then I had another friend who was like, oh, I'm over at Ginsburg and Daniels. So like both of them called the same lawyer by chance.
Oh, great. Oh,
and then he called me the next day and he was like, we want to meet you. So I came in the next day and he was like, okay, we want to rep you. So then I called Marvis and I was like, oh, just send my contract to my lawyers. It's like, oh, great. I just like got it.
Everyone, that doesn't normally happen like that.
Oh, who are incredible. Your lawyers? And you're like,
cousin's husband,
So I didn't know that you could have lawyers first and that they would help you get reps. So once I did those shorts, they kind of sent those shorts around.
Right.
And I signed with CIA after they saw my first short, and then I was making my second short.
The first short being the Movie Machine?
Mm-hmm. And the second one was like Lauren Lapkus, Nicole Byer, Mary Holland. And it's called Hairpin Bender. And that's just about a bunch of female comedians that it's kind of like a walk and talk.
Have they go on a bender?
Kind of. I mean, it's like, I was inspired because I really like, maybe I just really like kind of movies that feel real. So it's like with all of those ladies, they're so funny, but I wanted to put them into a more real environment. Mm-hmm. So it was like Slacker or Swingers, but with like women. Mm-hmm. And just like, I feel like I'm at that time too. I was like so sick of seeing women portrayed as like, we pay the bills. It's like hard to live. It's just like struggle. And so it was like, it's just these ladies kind of talking about how like, yeah, it sucks. It's a grind. And like, you know, am I even doing the right thing? So it's just kind of a short about them kind of having a night where they kind of talk about like, what are they doing?
Yeah. You know what I love about both of those shorts is that it feels like you've got a real eye for talent, right? Like, mm-hmm. So all of those people were about to blow up, right? Like,
yeah.
I'm trying to place what year was the Hairpin Bender?
We shot, I think that was like 2 years ago.
2 years ago, yeah. So Lauren maybe was already.
She was, yeah, she was.
But everybody else was kind
of. She was on Orange is the New Black.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. We had talked about the project for a long time. Like, we were like, I want to do this movie. You'd be so great. I kind of want you to be like the Vince Vaughn and like this thing. But then she was like, yeah, I want to do it too. And then she became really busy. And then it was like, I know if we don't make this now, I'm never going to get all of these women together. And it was the way we shot it. I would never recommend shooting a short like this because basically I sent out a doodle. I don't know if you guys have used a doodle. It's like an online thing to like schedule a group of people.
Yeah.
I like sent out a doodle and I was like, these are the dates that I'm thinking of. Like check off when you have availability. So I wrote the script based on like when people had availability, like, okay, Aparna and Lauren have a day together. Let's write a scene with them.
Are you serious?
That is crazy. And also so genius though. Right. Because again, it's giving yourself constraints, right?
Yeah.
You know, these people are awesome. You want to put them together, but like,
yeah.
You got to shoot it because of that doodle.
And we shot 5 days all ran. Like there were maybe 2 days together and I was like, okay, let's shoot this other day. Like, and I had three DPs cause it was like the cast is the thing that has to set it.
Right.
And like my DP couldn't make one day. So I was like, okay, let's get this other person. And like, there were definitely things I would.
And were you financing this whole thing yourself?
Yeah. I mean, both of the shorts that I did, again, since I hadn't done anything on my own, I was like, I'm going to try to scrimp and save and call in my favors and like a little bit of my tax return. Like they're both really, you know, small, but they were, you know, not insignificant. But again, most of the money went into like renting equipment or like lights or like feeding people, mm-hmm. just like having really good snacks and food.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, there's a lot of Sprinkles cupcakes on.
Yeah, there's always Sprinkles cupcakes on my set.
And you knew the cast from your UCB stuff,
yeah,
and your brother and stuff?
Yeah, friends. Because when I was at UCB, I met a lot of them and just, yeah, mostly. And then I would get excited about projects. Like I didn't know Ron or Matt. But my brother did, so I like pitched them the stories and they were like, yeah, this sounds great. And again, I feel like I do that where you're like, I'm writing this kind of with this person in mind. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh, I think you'd be great in this. And but yeah, the Hairpin Bender thing was, it was crazy how we shot it. And again, we stole like all of our locations. We didn't have like, we shot like in a hiking scene and like one, we shot in some like this convenience store that we weren't supposed to use. Like they were even like, our landlord won't let us. But we're like, this will be fine.
Hold on. I want to talk about shooting.
Yeah.
It was an open convenience store and you just went in and shot in it?
There is like a store right by my house and they close at 8 every night. So I was like, this is perfect. It's like such a cute little...
It's out front though.
No, it's in the convenience store.
And it was open?
Well, they close at 8 o'clock at night.
So you go in at 7:59 with your whole crew?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we can't close it until you guys leave?
They let us. They were just like, don't like. They were like, we're gonna play dumb.
Don't tell the owners, the employees.
Oh,
let them.
Yeah. Gotcha.
But they were like, no. I was like, where are we gonna get this?
Hey, do you like cupcakes?
Yeah.
You're like, we're just gonna unplug all your ice machines real quick. Yeah.
We didn't even do that, and we even stole like a gas station location. We were just like, can we use your pump that's not working?
That is so excellent.
So it was like really run and gun, and like.
And you produced it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Again, I feel like, oh my God, it's so crazy to think that I did that or that we did that. But you're like, okay, it's done.
Yeah, you did it. And yeah. And then you have all these cool locations and it's not just like another short in your apartment, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And again, the movie My Machine, that was one location, but it was, we turned my friend's like separated garage. I have a friend that I worked with on Cupcake Wars. She's like a production designer. She helped me build and we built this huge, crazy set where multiple TVs and like DVDs and wires and junk. Like it was just like this like hovel of like movies and
like
screens.
Pie.
Kinda, yeah. So you're like, this is our location. And what was really cool about that is when we had the screening for it, we had the it's still set up.
Uh-huh.
And my friend's house, they have this big backyard and we put up an outdoor screen.
Yeah, that's fun.
So my brother, Ron Funches, and Matt Bronger all did stand-up.
Yeah.
And then we showed the short.
That's great.
In the backyard. And then people could watch, look at the set.
That's living the dream right there.
Yeah,
that's
it was
so
like,
good.
This is the coolest screening. It's like, it's not going to get better than this.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is kind of perfect.
Yeah.
Well, I had a question, actually, that pertains to my own life right now. I told you guys I'm...
Yeah.
You know, a director's reel is like this real weird thing, like whether you even need it or you don't. Like, I've never heard of a story of someone getting a job because their reel looked good, unless it was a commercial job.
Hold on, I want to make sure we clarify too. Sometimes when people say reel, they literally just mean like a stack of like, oh, these are the three shorts that I have.
A portfolio.
A portfolio versus a like a sizzle reel where it's like, this
they
is
had
a
my
montage.
Sizzle reel.
They, and that's what got, oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Or at least. It's like the first thing they watch and they're like, okay, we'll delve in. Like to me, the goal of a reel, because I usually send people my website. There's 25 of my best things on there, maybe. It's hard. It takes a long time if you want to go through all of them. And there's different genres of things and people don't know what to click on. Right?
So if you just watch the sizzle. It's like, oh, that's three minutes of Maureen does best.
Yeah, I think that. I feel like this comes up a lot with like the director's reels and I'm on a couple different director's groups where like this becomes like the conversation, whether it's like, do you have a reel that has like scenes in it or do you have a sizzle reel or do you have a longer one? And like, honestly, like for a time I had a sizzle and then a longer one. And now I just have like, I just basically went to the sizzle because I'm like, if somebody watches something cool in that like minute or a minute and a half as it should be, then they'll want to go back and watch other stuff.
So a minute and a half is your sizzle reel.
I think like people have such a short attention span that like it's a sizzle is what's going to get them excited. You're like, oh cool, what else is this? Like what is this?
But so how many lines of dialogue do you fit?
My sizzle doesn't have any dialogue.
It's just cool shots.
It's just cool shit. That's also my motto, guys.
Make
cool shit.
Wait,
no joke.
Is there any? Because my pet peeve about sizzles is like when there's an actor and they're moving their lips, but you don't hear what they say. Is there any of that stuff?
There's not really any of that stuff. I mean, maybe in the one that I have now, but for the most part, whenever I put my sizzle together, it's just like a lot of movement or like showing scope. Or like, you know, different kinds of shots and not using the same actor a bunch. But most of the time, I feel like I went in for an interview recently or just met with some people and they were like, oh, wait, wow, your reel was so great. And I was like, I didn't even think it was that good, but they're like, it was the best reel that we saw. But maybe it was just that tonally, it was like, oh, it all makes sense.
So everyone, can we put your reel on the site? Is it?
Sure. Yeah. So I mean, I think the reel that I have now is not the one that they said that about, but.
Yeah, no, this one's probably better.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I had stuff in it that I was like, oh, this isn't. And I feel like a lot of people send me their reels. Actually, I'm supposed to look at one of my friends right now. So I feel like I've been good about being like, oh, this is, I would take this out. Like, I think the pitfalls of reels sometimes are they show the same actor a bunch of times.
Sure.
Yeah. Or it's like talking heads. You're like, oh no, do you have like an action shot or the camera's moving, even if it's a moment? Yeah, I feel like I've gotten a lot of work or meetings from my sizzle.
Yeah. We should freaking make our own sizzle reels. Matt and I have been, we talk about this a lot, but lately people have just been asking us for reels and it's really annoying because we're like, well, if we cut a reel and it's so specific, like,
yeah,
and we shoot a bunch of new stuff, like it's a pain in the ass to edit. And also, like, do you want to show scenes? And is it like a comedy reel or a drama reel? Or do you have to make separate reels?
This one I have now, like, is for a long time, I just had all comedy in mind. And now I was like, whatever, I'm just going to mix it. So it might be weird, but I'm like, okay, this works.
Yeah. I feel like mine, I think there's a real skill in knowing how to cut a comedy reel that is true to your voice, but all, and is also funny and not too talky, right? Like, most of my stuff is like pretty dialogue driven. And so, if it's like a little more slapsticky or active or just more action, you know, like I think that kind of can save a reel. Whereas like whenever I start to try and cut mine, it either ends up just being like too flashy and not really representative of what I do, or like a Woody Allen reel. And
it's
like, well, you know,
well, this last reel that I did, it was the first time I never edited my own.
Yeah. So, I think that's the secret. That's interesting.
I don't know. I think I don't like it as much.
Oh, really?
The problem, I mean, I hope this person that edited it does not hear me, but I was just like, oh, that's, why would you pick, like, because I was like, oh, I wanted to like give it to somebody else to see kind of if they see other stuff. And then I was like, oh no, they picked all the wrong things.
No, I'll tell you, I'll give you two reasons why you can't have someone else edit your reel.
Yeah.
three reasons. Number one, they're not going to spend the time like going through things and frame fucking and all that stuff that you would do on your reel. Number two, they're just not going to like kind of, they don't know your breadth of work. So they'll probably just like watch everything once and forget it, you know? And
yeah.
But number three, the most important thing I think, and something that I've really been thinking a lot about lately, is that your reel should represent what type of stuff you want to do. Right.
Yeah.
Like I want to do big scope things. I want to do scenes with 100 extras, or I want to do stuff with like celebrities in a room or whatever. Like just, you're fine tuning, you're saying like, of all the thousands of minutes of footage that I've shot and edited, these are the ones that are representative of how I think of myself as a director and the type of work that I want to get. And then editor is, especially unless they're like your main editor or something, they're just never going to know.
They're not going to get it.
And maybe you can have them do like a pass on music and graphics or something.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I feel like I learned that from having this person do it, because I basically had to sit and be like, this is what, and I still don't love it. I'm like, there's something with the flow that's a little off, but it gets the point across. And like, you know, you're like, oh yeah, you want to put the main celebrities up top or like the most engaging thing, so somebody's still watching and you're like, I don't think you did that.
Right.
Yeah.
So reels are interesting. But I feel like anytime anybody sends me a reel that's like has a sizzle up top and then scenes, I'm like, oh no, like I want to be able to pick.
That is exactly my comedy reel. It's like a 30-second sizzle, pretty much like all celebrity faces and then like a couple funny visuals. Mm-hmm. And then it's like three scenes from my work that I think are like the funny, like that work on a pure comedy level. They're not actually, the production value is not like my best production value.
But just to show that you're genuinely funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I've done where you like send the sizzle, so like they'd watch that and then probably maybe like three links to different, like the top three. So they're like, oh, I liked that. And I can just watch these things that I picked. Because that's what, you know, you can go to the website, my website too, but it's like, yeah, what do you look at?
Right. In commercials, it's different because you only get hired to do a commercial if you've directed like that exact commercial before.
Yeah.
So you really only show people like, oh, there's dogs. Here's two things with dogs.
Yeah, my dog ones. Got
That's it.
Yeah.
And a cat. But it was a very dog-like cat.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like reels are hard.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, because I guess with the Kimmel stuff, it's probably like, I mean, you have like Will Smith reading a tweet, you know, but does that, it's like the biggest stars, but doing kind of the smallest things. Like, does, I'm just curious if something like that makes your reel or not.
It did not real, not in my, I mean, I wouldn't put like the tweets on there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I also think like, it's not as visual as like, I think my work is a little bit more visual storytelling. And then for that kind of stuff, I would put more like scenes or like production design in it. Cause I think those things would stick out with all my other stuff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't put that in.
Yeah, because it's funny. I mean, sometimes we talk about this all the time. You worked at College Humor for years. I worked at Disney for years. It's like we have such a giant amount of stuff that we've shot, but like how much of it is.
And I feel like people are savvy now, too, where like if they see that's just something like that, they're not going to be like, well, that's, did you direct them in a scene? You know what I mean? Like it's not from a narrative piece. I don't know. Like I think it can be, you have to make sure that tonally it all matches or like fits together.
Yeah, I think it's also tricky when you're at a specific place for a long time, right? Like I have a ton of great College Humor sketches, but I wouldn't use very many of them because it's always the same cast over and over again.
Right. Yeah. And they have a certain feel and look and pace.
And so it just kind of, it all ends up blending together. And then it almost looks like I've only done one thing. Yeah. And it's like, no, I've done a ton, you know?
That's kind of like when I worked at Sprinkles and I made a sizzle.
Right.
It was like, okay, I have to like make sure not to put too many cupcake shots in. Yeah, sure. But then the great thing about those Sprinkle shorts is they were all different styles and genres. Yeah. So I could be like, oh, there's this one like walk and talk in New York and then there's like this beach scene,
right?
But I did go in one time to meet somebody and they're like, oh, the Sprinkles, I get why there was so many cupcakes in your reel. They're like, oh, okay. Like I was like, oh, I tried to hide them. So it's not just like wall-to-wall cupcakes.
Yeah.
If you want to see Maureen's reel, you can go to Maureen Barucha. That's BHAROOCHA.com.
yeah.
Are you on Twitter or anywhere else?
Yeah, my Twitter handle is M Barucha. And then I'm a big fan of Instagram. So Maureen Barucha, Instagram.
Awesome.
And Maureen is M-A-U-R-E-E-N.
We'll have links to all of that stuff.
And then I post some of my Kimmel stuff behind the scenes.
Oh,
there.
Cool.
Yeah.
A little inside track.
Yeah. And now that there's Female Filmmaker Friday hashtag. I don't know if you guys know about that.
Sure.
Oh, that's a weekly thing. I've noticed.
Yeah. It was like this underground thing that like a bunch of female filmmakers sent to each other, and it was supposed to start on February 2nd, but then people started posting the Friday before.
What is the story behind that? Somebody was like,
I think the story behind it was somebody from Lady Bird just being like, oh, we don't see enough images of women directing. It's so cool and it inspires other people. Let's just get that out there. That's actually what I have been doing with my Instagram, because I have a private one and a public one. Mm-hmm. My public one is just, okay, it was an experiment at the time. I was like, let me just post pictures of just working. And that actually gets way more likes than my private stuff. So.
Yeah.
But that's kind of where it came from. It's really cool. It's kind of inspiring to see everyone's stories. Or like, this is the first time I did this, or this time I was on this TV show or whatever.
It's also a nice excuse just to post a bad act directing picture. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like normally it's like, okay, like, you know, you having fun on set is one thing, but you don't want like, there's not too many options for you to like post that picture of you pointing next to a camera.
Yes,
and now you get to every Friday.
Yeah.
Wait, are you guys ever on set and you're like, hey, take a picture, like ask someone to take a picture of you directing?
Oh, yes.
Real quick?
Yeah. Well, I have like my two movies that I did. My brother came to set like both times and like he brought a camera.
Nice. Oh, yeah. Lucky.
So it was just like, I'm going to go over there. Take a picture of me like talking to the actor. Yeah.
I've been on a lot of commercial shoots where they have like a stills person and I'm like, hey, can you hook me up with these stills of me and whoever.
Yeah, usually a still person is good about that.
And then
Oh man,
they're like, you talk to the PR company.
Sometimes there's like, oh, we can't like,
yeah, you got to buddy up.
Yeah
My wife directs as well, and we had a set photographer, and so she's an actor, so she was directing the thing she was acting in, and but right before lunch grabbed a couple shots of her like that we staged of her directing in character or like in costume, I mean, that look awesome, and we use them all the time.
Yeah, it's like you need those like staple shots where you're like, okay.
Yeah. It feels cheesy to be like, hold on, will you please take my picture and I'm going to pose a little bit, but it is worth it, I think.
But sometimes it's just like about owning it, right? Where it is like, oh, I feel like it's like when you first call yourself a director, where it's like, what do you do? And you're like, I direct. And you're like, yeah, I'm a director.
I'm a director.
Yeah. It's like before you get paid too much, you know what I mean? You're like, this is a paying job. I direct.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, should we go into our unpaid endorsements?
Unpaid endorsements. So my endorsement is, do you guys remember the movie Walk Hard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Dewey Cox story?
The Dewey Cox story.
I feel like it didn't get enough attention when it came out. I don't think it did super well.
The guy that plays the dad is in my movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's so funny.
Yeah.
That movie is great.
Raymond Barry.
Yeah, it's really great.
It's on Netflix right now, so like you can watch it again, or for the first time. I was reminded of it and rewatched it recently. The songs are all super funny. It's great, and like as kind of a lover of those biopics and like the eras of music that they're trying to skewer, it's all really funny. Like there's a great like Brian Wilson smile bit. It's funny. It's real stupid.
It's a great line. Wrong son died.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Yeah, he says that. That's a runner.
It over and over.
Now I really want to, yeah. The wrong son died. I want to watch it.
So the best song by far is a duet between Jenna Fischer's character and Dewey Cox called Let's Duet. That's nothing but like double entendres.
Oh.
But as like kind of a classic Western song. Yeah. It's great. It's like so fun. Walk Hard is my first endorsement. And my other one actually is Jenna Fischer, Pam from The Office, has a new book out. Do you guys remember? So she was in Walk Hard, but when The Office was first blowing up, MySpace was also a thing.
Oh, yeah.
The Actor's Life, A Survival Guide.
The Actor's Life, A Survival Guide by Jenna Fischer. She would post blogs on MySpace about... Her experience.
Oh,
really? And like I found them to be really insightful and applicable and great as well. It's just, you know, if you ever need a little bit of reinforcement of like, you know, just why we do this or like how hard it can be or like you want to feel supported moving out to Los Angeles, she literally like threw all of her stuff in her hatchback and drove out and moved to West Hollywood and like,
you know,
made it. And it's awesome. So she's got a new book out. I haven't read it yet, but I can't wait to, and I remember those MySpace posts very fondly. So
wait, so you don't know if it's good or not?
Well, I heard her on...
should I buy it?
You remember those MySpace blogs.
Yeah, I remember those MySpace blogs, and I'm very excited, so I will let everyone know. Oren, if you want to wait, if you want to save the 1999.
I'm going to buy it right now.
There you go.
It's 1216, by the way.
1216, oh boy.
That's a deal.
Yeah. So, Oren, we'll have to report back, but I'm excited to read it, and I can stand by Walk Hard no matter what.
Okay, I'm buying it. Place your order. What tax? What a ripoff.
Maureen, you got anything?
Sure. Well, now, I mean, your two inspired me, so now I want to do two.
Sure, yeah.
Okay. So first is your movie inspired me as well. Like, I'm just thinking of a movie that I've seen recently. I'm like, God, I haven't seen this in so long. Is Hard Eight.
Sure.
I haven't seen it yet. The Tarantino film.
No. Thomas Anderson.
Thomas Anderson's PTA, first feature.
Sorry, what am I thinking of? Crazy Eight? The Hateful Eight.
Hateful Eight, yeah.
Same number.
Yeah. Yes.
But yeah, I feel like I just recently watched it because I liked Phantom Thread a lot and I really like Paul Thomas Anderson. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to kind of go back and watch some of the old movies. And I forgot how well done and just like simple. Like it's just a character story and the twists in it is really great. And like obviously like John C. Reilly's like awesome. And I forget the main guy's name who's plays Sidney.
I can't remember.
Yeah, he's in like Magnolia.
Yeah,
he's like
Tom Cruise.
No, what is it?
So prolific, the actor.
I think he's got three names, right?
Philip Baker Hall?
Yep.
Yes. I mean, he's just so great. So I would say like revisit that movie. Probably it's one that most people might not have seen.
Yeah.
And if you have, you probably haven't seen it in a while.
Philip Baker Hall is Agent Bookman from Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
The librarian.
So I would say revisit that movie. It's quite enjoyable. And like Sam Jackson's in it too, which I also forgot.
Is Hard Eight the one that, because I know Paul Thomas Anderson dropped out of film school. It's his first feature, right? So I think he just.
It was his first feature, but I know that he did like Coffee and Cigarettes. That was like, he did like a short about Sydney and a short about like Coffee and Cigarettes. And both of those turned into features.
Coffee and Cigarettes is.
The other guy. Jim Jarmusch.
No, he also Paul Thomas Anderson did something that was like like coffee or something.
Oh yeah, his is called Coffee or Something.
That's gonna be mine.
Yeah, sure.
Coffee or Something.
Hey, you're due for a new short, right?
Yeah. Black and White. Yeah. I'm in.
Oh my god, he's directed a lot of stuff. Cigarettes and Coffee.
Sorry, I stand corrected.
There you go. I wonder if it's like a riff off of.
I don't know.
That's interesting.
But I know that he made
that was 1993. Coffee and Cigarettes is like 2000.
Coffee and Cigarettes was Jarmusch would do an installment whenever people he had. So some of that stuff is like super old.
Oh, so, really? I mean, yeah. I stand corrected. Cigarettes and coffee.
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, so I would say like check out that movie. It's quite enjoyable. And then my other endorsement, I would say growing up in Santa Barbara, Santa Barbara. They've had some rough times with the mudslides. Yeah. So maybe just give, you know, don't forget they're there.
Yeah.
Give them some love.
Go spend some tourism money.
Get some, pump some more money back into Santa Barbara.
I was just up in Los Olivos not that long ago, and it's very nice still.
Yeah. It's like go have a good time, take care of yourself.
Yeah, love it.
Is Loma Linda in Santa Barbara? Oh no, that's San Bernardino County.
Ugh, no.
Sorry. Hey, we might have some listeners from there. It's Loma Linda is before we started recording. Is one of these blue zones.
I love
zones.
Loma Linda.
There's five blue zones in the world.
So a blue
zone.
The
Italian
is.
Island of Sardinia, Okinawa, Japan, Loma Linda, California. Costa Rica, isolated Nicoya Peninsula, and some Greek island. A blue zone is where there's just a ton of people that are over in their 90s and 100s.
Oh.
And they're super healthy. It's not like on medication or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, so go move there if you want to live for a long time.
A good retirement community, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not good for me because I'm not really good at planning for my retirement. So the sooner the better. Cool. Well, those were great, great endorsements. My endorsement is not going to be great. So I went to Starbucks this morning, the Starbucks that I talk a lot about on this podcast in Los Feliz. And I got like the same thing
Starbucks
I always
reserve.
Get. I had a coffee and like a turkey bacon sandwich, and I went and I was going to go sit down on a couch, and I saw that I had gone there like on Friday, and I sat down on the same part of the same couch, and the same person was sitting across from me and next to me. And so I was like trying to find a different place to sit, because at first I was like, it's kind of weird for me to sit next to the same two strangers I just sat next to on Friday. I feel like I'm a loser. Why am I at this coffee shop? But I didn't really, I was like kind of looking around, and the guy that was sitting across from me on Friday was like gestured to the couch, and I was like, okay, I'll sit here. And I was like, hi, yeah, deja vu. And he's like,
sure. You're like, am I in the pilot of a sitcom right now?
Or that was Jim Jarmusch and he was shooting an episode of Coffee and Cigarettes.
Well, he's like, my name is, Louise, by the way. I was like, oh, I'm Oren. And he's like, Horan? And I was like, no, Oren, no H. I was like, yeah, it's kind of weird how I'm sitting here again. He's like, I actually love routine. And he's like there reading like a newspaper, like with paper.
He's like, I live here.
Made out of paper. No, and I was like, yeah, what is wrong with me? Why am I trying to like change up my coffee shop routine all the time? I'm already like driving all the way to Los Feliz for this coffee shop, even though I used to go there because I dropped my daughter off at daycare right next to it. And she's not going to that daycare anymore. But I realized,
so you also
like
routine.
Yeah.
No, I realize. Well, I guess so. My endorsement is to embrace the routine. Like, I think there's like, oh, there's this new coffee shop I can go right at, or this other coffee shop, or this other place. Or like, it's like I'm trying to explore the city while I'm trying to work in various places. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a mistake.
Just focus on the work. That's interesting.
And just go to the same place. Cause my wife's like, oh, there's this new coffee shop. Why don't you come here instead? It's like in Echo Park. And I was like, well, I know where to park at the Starbucks. I know where I'm going to sit. I know what I'm going to order. Like all those.
Luis has a spot waiting for me.
Yeah. Like the experience of going to a new place is going to take away from me actually sitting down and like opening up like a word processor and like writing stuff. So, and I have this book on my nightstand that I only read the first chapter of, but it was great, called The Creative Habit. And the whole premise of that book is how it's much easier to be creative if you make it a habit as opposed to this thing that you're trying to find time for. And I mean, you're a full timer, so you don't get it at all, Maureen, but when you're a freelancer, it's really hard to not procrastinate.
Yeah. Yeah. You worked from home for 3 years.
Yeah. That's really hard.
That's rough. Yeah.
I didn't wear regular clothes for 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And that first year you're like, I've won. Ha ha. Yeah.
And then you're like, I'm just sad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, anyway, so my endorsement is that routine is great, you know, go for it. At least until next week's episode where I tell you I hate it. But anyway, if you guys want to find out more about what we talked about this episode, check out our website, justshootitpod.com. We also love questions and comments and feedback, and send us your reels. Maureen said she'll review all of them.
Yeah, we'll send them directly to Maureen.
You can email us. That's a joke,
guys. Don't worry. But you can. We will send. Oren will send back feedback if you do send people stuff.
Yeah, that's how I procrastinate. As I watch people's reels.
Oh yeah,
and
it's like I'm
send notes.
Really good at procrastinating.
But email us at justshootitpod@gmail.com, or if you have a shorter comment or question, you can tweet at us at justshootitpod on Twitter.
If you've got a really interesting question, you can drop us a voicemail at 2626-SHOOT-1. Love those voicemails.
Whoa, is that a landline?
It's a Google Voice line.
Yeah. Oh. So we just get the little MP3, we throw it on the show. It's great. It's super
awesome.
Fun. And you get to hear the voice of the person asking the question. It's really neat.
That's really cool.
And also, we always love iTunes reviews and ratings, so please leave those for us. This episode was edited by Jay McAuliffe, and our webmaster is Ewan Williams. And the music that you're listening to right now is by the artist Jazar, and it's from the Free Music Archive. And that's all she wrote.
Thanks,
next
everyone.
Time.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.